Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Grizz Weekly Grind, a proud affiliate of the Basketball Podcast Network. I'm Pete Pranica, TV voice of the Memphis Grizzlies and your host for the program. This is episode 28 of season 2 of the Grizz Weekly Grind, being brought to you today by the Hoop City Basketball Club. They've got the Jack Jones Spring League. They have both individual placements for 1st to 8th grade boys, and also team registrations are now open. Want to make sure that you get your team registered or your young son involved. Get them registered. All the details can be found at HoopCityBC.com. As they say, it's in our blood. It's who we are at Hoop City. HoopCityBC.com is the website, and you can also follow them on Twitter at HoopCityBC. Well, we will get to That Was the Week That Was in a moment, and also to some Petey's points, and talk about some of the great developments for the Memphis Grizzlies, as the Grizzlies are a couple of games away from heading into the All-Star break. They've got a Tuesday night game in New Orleans against the Pelicans, and a back-to-back Wednesday with Portland, a radically reshaped Portland roster without Damian Lillard, still out with injury, and then the Grizzlies into the All-Star break. So we'll talk about you can't even say the All-Star break is the halfway point of the season. I mean, the Grizzlies will have played well over 50 games by the time we get to the All-Star break. So it's no longer the midway point of the season, but still, it's a good time to look back. And I've got some thoughts about how the Grizzlies have developed over the first, quote-unquote, half of the season, or actually a little bit more. Before we get to That Was the Week That Was and the last two games for the Grizzlies, both roadies at Detroit and at Charlotte, just wanted to pause and talk about the Super Bowl, because I watched the Super Bowl, and I watched it with very, very little rooting interest. I would have been happy for Cincinnati to win it. I got to meet Dan Horde, their outstanding radio play-by-play announcer. We were both voted our respective states' Sportscaster of the Year in 2017, and had a chance to visit with Dan during the awards weekend in Winston-Salem, and just a wonderful guy, and a magical season for him, being the voice of not only the Cincinnati Bengals, but also the University of Cincinnati. And so both of the teams that he calls had opportunities to win championships. Unfortunately, neither one came through, but certainly a great season for Dan Horde, who is an outstanding announcer and a fine gentleman. J.B. Long is the radio announcer of the L.A. Rams, and he's a Notre Dame guy, so I would have been fine with that. And Ben Skoranek is a Notre Dame guy who plays for the Los Angeles Rams, would have been happy, regardless of the outcome of the game. What I was most interested about, frankly, was Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, which will be their final game together, as they admitted. For those of you who don't know Al Michaels, his contract is up with NBC. Amazon Prime has now acquired the Thursday night package, and they are going all in on hiring the very best talent and throwing a lot of money at it. And so the presumption is that Al Michaels will be the voice of Thursday night football on Amazon Prime. Chris Collinsworth will not follow him over. Chris Collinsworth has extended his contract with NBC, so the presumption is Mike Tirico will take over on Sunday Night Football. Long way around of saying, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth are one of the few broadcast duos in the NFL that I will watch a game and watch it closely and listen to it closely, despite the fact that I have zero rooting interest in it. I really didn't care who won the Super Bowl. It was a good game. It wasn't exciting with a ton of big plays, but it was certainly compelling because it went down to practically the final play of the game, and certainly the final drive as far as the Los Angeles Rams are concerned. Sometimes people ask me, who are the broadcasters that you admire the most? And I would put Al Michaels at the top of the list. And the reason for that is that he can convey a sense of gravitas. He can capture the moment as well as pretty much anybody who has ever put on a headset. Doesn't have to scream. You can tell when he's excited, but it's not because he gets louder necessarily. The other thing that I try to emulate that Al Michaels does, I think better than anybody, is to think the game as a coach. There weren't that many situations yesterday in the Super Bowl, but so many times, because there were no challenges, I don't even think there was an instant replay review yesterday. But he knows the rules so well and can say, well, if the review goes this way, then these are the downstream consequences of that. When do you use timeouts? So he thinks strategically like a coach does. He doesn't give you the X's and O's, and Collinsworth is fabulous at it. But what Al Michaels can do is he can set the situation as well as anybody in the NFL. 11th Super Bowl called by Al Michaels yesterday, tying him with Pat Summerall. And if I have one game that I am going to want my favorite broadcasters there, it's going to be Al and Chris. Love John Madden when John was in the booth with Al. Chris really talks about the X's and O's and really dives in, maybe deeper than some casual fans may want in terms of X's and O's, but I think he adds so much to the telecast. John Madden would probably be 1A when it comes to sidekicks to Al Michaels. Love Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. They are the very best. I think if you had to put up a Mount Rushmore of TV NFL play-by-play guys, it's got to be Al Michaels. I think Dick Enberg has to be on there. Pat Summerall and Joe Buck. To me, those are the four very best that have ever done it. And I think Al Michaels at 77 is as good as it gets. There's also the thought he may go to ESPN because ABC ESPN gets a Super Bowl. By the time they come around in the Super Bowl rotation, he would be 81. Has he lost a little bit? Yeah, a little bit. And Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, posted an amazing article. And for those of you who don't know, Andrew Marchand is a sports media writer, very, very well plugged in New York, knows everybody and knows pretty much where the stories are, and wrote a glowing review of Al Michaels' performance in the Super Bowl. But then some readers pointed out that the last play, the last offensive play for the Bengals, it almost seemed that Al didn't realize fully that that was the defining play of the Super Bowl, and there wasn't a really great call of the sack as Burrow went down and actually an incomplete pass. And that's one of those things that, having been in big moments, not a Super Bowl admittedly, sometimes you're just like, wait, what just happened? And sometimes it is hard to contextualize what exactly happened and did that determine the game? And Al wasn't on top of it as much as I think we have all come to expect. But still, the fact of the matter is, he with the exception of that, he captured the moment, I thought, very, very well, particularly on the Odell Beckham touchdown catch, where he pointed out that Cleveland basically shoved him out the door, and now Beckham comes back and gets a touchdown in the Super Bowl, ends up being injured, which actually was shadows of the injury in the Packers' last Super Bowl win over the Steelers, where Charles Woodson broke his collarbone in the first half and could not play in the second half, and he had been their spiritual leader. And despite the fact that the Rams lost a top receiver in Odell Beckham Jr., they were somehow able to make it work with Cooper Kupp. Again, long way around of saying Al Michaels, I have tremendous respect for him at 77 to be as sharp as he is. And hopefully he resurfaces in another Super Bowl. It would be great for him to get to do a 12th. That would be the most in NFL history. We'll see if that happens. As I said, if he goes to ABC ESPN, he would get a Super Bowl, but that would be 4 years down the line. If he sticks with Amazon Prime, they're not going to have a Super Bowl. It remains to be seen exactly how all that plays out. But as I said, long-winded way of saying, when it comes to NFL play-by-play guys on television, there isn't anybody better than Al Michaels. You can just retire the trophy now because he has been so good for so long with so many different broadcast partners and very different broadcast partners. When you think about Chris Collinsworth and John Madden, those are two very, very diametrically opposed voices in the analyst's chair. Both very good, but in very, very different ways. All right, enough talk about broadcasting, enough talking about football. Let's get to That Was the Week That Was and talk some basketball. Grizzlies go to Detroit, and they face a team that comes in at 12-42. Cade Cunningham had been missing time with a right hip pointer. He was questionable up to the very start of the game and ended up not playing in the game. Grizzlies jump out in front of the Pistons 41-19 after one quarter. Pistons would cut into that significant deficit, a second quarter that could charitably be described as a slogfest. Lots of free throws in this game. There were a total of 52 fouls in this game. 52. Usually teams average right around 20 fouls a game, and there were just a ton of whistles here. And it really slowed the pace of the game, which favored the Detroit Pistons. Even with all the fouls, and the Grizzlies got way too many foul calls in the second quarter. And that's not the fault of Scott Foster, Natalie Sego, or Brandon Schwab. They called the game they saw in front of them, and I thought they called a very good game. It was just that there was a lot of reaching and grabbing and not a lot of really good defense in that second quarter. Grizzlies for the game actually shot 42 free throws to just 21 for the Pistons. The Grizzlies, believe it or not, and I've been tracking this number for years now, the difference in Grizzly free throw attempts versus opponent free throw attempts. And typically the Grizzlies have gotten the short end of the stick. Again, that's not an officiating commentary. That's just the numbers. The Grizzlies are now top 10 in free throw attempt margin per game. It's only about 1.2, something like that per game. So it's not a massive number. Nobody really has a massive number except maybe like two or three free throws more on average per game. But still, the Grizzlies are on the plus side of that, and a 2-to-1 ratio in terms of attempted free throws in this game. Grizzlies put 7 in double figures. Morant and Bane combined for 45 points, and the Grizzlies, a great bench effort. D'Anthony Melton was sensational off the bench, 14 points, hit 4 of 8 from downtown. Kyle Anderson with a double-double off the bench, a game-best plus 28, 14-9 with a block and a steal for Brandon Clark, who continues his very strong play. This Pistons team, as I said, they didn't know if they would have Cade Cunningham. They had a walkthrough right before the game. He was out there warming up, but he ended up not playing in the game. Grizzlies go wire-to-wire, leading by as many as 28. The final 132-107. Grizzlies get to 39 wins against just 18 defeats. Pistons now 12-43. Grizzlies sweep the season series from the Detroit Pistons. Grizzlies then get a day off, and they go to Charlotte, and the Grizzlies, again, a great first quarter, 36-15. This looked like it would be a laugher, and then the Grizzlies put up another 30-point quarter, and the Grizzlies, leading by as many as 35 in this game, you think that, okay, this is going to be 24 minutes of garbage time. It was anything but. Grizzlies got themselves in foul problems. Jaren Jackson Jr., Steven Adams ended up fouling out. Desmond Bane turned it over 7 times. And finally, LaMelo Ball found the range after a very, very mediocre first half. And Terry Rozier got to his scary Terry persona. 35 points for Terry Rozier. And Charlotte battles almost all the way back. But the Grizzlies, they make their final 5 shots of the game. Morant coming up with big plays late. Desmond Bane with a couple of free throws to seal the deal. And the Grizzlies win it 125-118. Grizzlies outshot Charlotte 49%-40%. Difference in this, and the reason this game was so close, is because Charlotte was plus 3 in threes made. Both teams shot 33 free throws, but Charlotte made 6 more. Grizzlies shot just 20 of 33 from the free throw line. That is a tick below 61% from the floor. And this has become an alarming trend for the Grizzlies, that they are just missing a ton of free throws. Steven Adams, 3 of 7, you kind of sort of expect that. You do not expect Ja Morant to miss 4. You certainly don't expect Zaire Williams to miss 3. And Jaren Jackson Jr., who has had some really, really good games. He was 6 of 6 in Detroit, only 4 of 6. And again, it doesn't cost the Grizzlies in this particular game, but I do have a concern that Grizzlies are going to have to get more locked in at the free throw line, or it could cost them a game that is very, very tight and potentially a game that could be very, very important for them. Jaren Jackson Jr., want to shine him up here because 18-10 boards for him with 2 blocks and 4 triples in this game. Jaren now with 6 double-doubles on the season and 3 in the last 5 games. The 6 double-doubles for Jaren Jackson Jr., that is a new single-season career high for him. So the Grizzlies, for the first time in franchise history, get to 40 wins on the season before the All-Star break. As I said earlier, the All-Star break isn't the midway point of the season by any stretch of the imagination. The Grizzlies have played 58 games already. They will have played 60 by the time we break for the All-Star break. But all that having been said, 40 wins before the All-Star break, 40-18 is a fabulous record. No issues with any of that. So that was the week that was, and we'll get to some Petey's points in a moment. But first, we tell you that today's show is being brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Hey, Hoops fans. The latest offer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is too good to pass up. I'm talking between the legs 360 windmill good. New customers can bet just $1 on any team and get $150 in free bets if they win. It is just that simple. Now, if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, don't worry. It's all good. You can still take your shot at a big payday because everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Basketball Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their very first deposit. So, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code TBPN, bet just $1 on any NBA team, and you get $150 in free bets if they win. That's promo code TBPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21 or older, minimum age and location requirements do vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for a full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gaming resources. Void where prohibited. Minimum $5 deposit. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. In Connecticut, call 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That is 467-369. All right, let's get to some Petey's points. I've been doing some statistical research before I stopped down to throw a pizza in the oven and open an ice cold beer and watch the Super Bowl. Grizzlies in first quarters have been just ridiculously good. And we'll talk about this on the pregame show from New Orleans on Tuesday night. Grizzlies, in their last 9 games, they have won 8 of 9. They have gone for 30 or more in all 9 first quarters. They are outscoring their opponents by an average of 11 points per first quarter. Grizzlies averaging 34-7, opponents averaging 24-6. Grizzlies outshooting their opponents 51% to 38%. And the Grizzlies, who are not known as a good three-point shooting team, shooting well above their season average at just under 39% from downtown. Grizzlies getting 7.5 assists to just 2.5 turnovers in first quarters of games. And the Grizzlies, meanwhile, are forcing a little more than 4 turnovers from their opponents in the first quarters. The Grizzlies are a tone setter, and they have taken on the mantra of, we want to break your spirit. And the Grizzlies did it in both games on this road trip, which will continue to New Orleans on Tuesday night. Grizzlies certainly did it against Detroit. Charlotte's spirit got renewed during halftime. James Borrego found some combinations at work, but the Grizzlies are getting off to just amazing starts. And it's a lot easier to play from a lead, and the Grizzlies now lead the NBA 9 games in which they have never trailed. That's most in the NBA. Boston and Milwaukee had 8 at last count. So the Grizzlies getting off to some amazing starts. Another amazing development about this basketball team is their road success. Second best road record in the NBA last time we checked. And did a little research. The last 22 road games, which essentially is since the blowout loss at Minnesota, where the Grizzlies had, Taylor Jenkins said it was one of the least competitive performances he's ever seen from this team. Grizzlies have gone 18-4. That is tied with Phoenix for the best road record over the last 22 road games by all teams. Grizzlies are averaging 116 points per game on the road in their last 22. Defense, well, the Grizzlies are playing at a fast pace, so they're going to give up some points. They are giving up 108.6, but the scoring margin for the Grizzlies in the last 22 road games is plus 7.5. That leads the NBA. That is the best in the NBA over the last 22 road games for all teams. So the Grizzlies have been great on the road. They're going to be put to the test, really, in New Orleans because they face a New Orleans team that seemingly always gives them problems. They're going to have to deal with Jonas Valanciunas, who's having a fantastic year, as I think everybody expected. You're also going to be dealing with Brandon Ingram, who is a very dangerous scorer. And now you got C.J. McCollum. And the Grizzlies long remember all the bad things that C.J. McCollum has done to this franchise, and now he is a member of the New Orleans Pelicans. So it's going to be a big test on Tuesday night, and the Grizzlies' road success is going to be put to the test in New Orleans. A bit of an odd travel situation for the Grizzlies, not that this matters really one way or another, but the Grizzlies came home after the game in Charlotte because Sunday and Monday were off days. Next game in New Orleans wasn't until Tuesday. So rather than keep the team on the road, Grizzlies flew back immediately after the game in Charlotte. They had Sunday at home to watch the Super Bowl. Grizzlies will fly out late afternoon on Monday and then get ready to take on New Orleans and then Portland back-to-back, and that will be Wednesday night, and that will be at home. So as we get ready to go into the All-Star break, and I'll be taking a break from the program. Got a very nice trip planned out to the West Coast and very much looking forward to some rest and relaxation and gearing up for the stretch run and the playoff run as well. It's just a good time to think about where this team has come and where this team has developed. And I was trying to think what's the best storyline for this team, and there are so many really good storylines. I really couldn't pick one. I'm going to bring up four. And I'm probably shortchanging somebody on the roster, and I apologize for that. But this is a team. There's nobody on this team that has regressed. Everybody has progressed. And I think that that is a great tribute to the front office. I think it's a great tribute to the performance staff. It's a great tribute to the players who have put in the work. So if you're talking about the best stories, and I just wrote four down, they're not in any priority order. So with that in mind, here are some of the best stories from pre-All-Star. Number one, Desmond Bane blossoming. We knew that Desmond Bane could shoot the basketball. I don't think a lot of Grizzlies fans were aware of how good a playmaker that he could be, and he certainly has proven to be that. He is top four among sophomore scorers, a class that includes LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards and Cole Anthony, and is going to the Rising Stars game, and deservedly so, and also part of the three-point shootout. Bane's been really good, and he's had his slumps, but he maintains the proper attitude, peaks and valleys are going to come and go, and boy, does he love to go on the road and show off and show all the teams that passed on him. You could have had this. Remember that Desmond Bane was picked 30th overall by Boston and then traded to the Grizzlies. He's letting everybody know, hey, you could have had me well before 30, and I think a lot of teams are regretting it. And this is where I have an issue with the draft combine and all the measurements. Yeah, his arms are shorter than normal, shorter than ideal. You know what? He makes shots. I don't care if he wears a 34-inch sleeve or a 35-inch sleeve. It really doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is he puts the ball in the bucket and prevents other guys from putting the ball in the bucket. That, to me, is the most important thing. And that's why, you know, the measurements, the vertical's kind of cool, the wingspan is kind of cool, but just because somebody has a big wingspan doesn't mean they're really, really good. You know, to me, can you play basketball? I don't care what size jacket you wear. Next best story, I'm going to go with Ja's continued growth. We knew that Ja would progress. I don't know if anybody saw this big leap from him, where he is a guard leading the NBA in paint points. I think his leadership has taken... I think it's taken a step forward. I think it has continued to grow in a natural process. When he came in as a rookie, he said, yeah, I know I'm number two overall pick, but I don't want to be the guy who's trying to tell everybody what to do because I'm a rookie. Well, now he knows the NBA a little bit better, and he can be a much better leader for this basketball team. And everybody loves playing with him. Everybody loves him as a teammate, and not just because he's an all-star starter, but just because of the quality of his personality. The other thing too about Ja is he's done a much better job, I think, this year of not trying to dunk everything, not trying to make everything a highlight play. Things do end up being highlight plays, but he does it because it's the most efficient way of getting the ball in the bucket one way or another, rather than trying to impress. Would he try that same dunk over Kevin Love that he tried as a rookie? Probably not. He doesn't have to dunk everything, and sometimes it's a simple finger roll or a layup. By the way, he's among the league leaders, I should say, in finger rolls and layups made. So he doesn't have to dunk everything. And I just think that his basketball IQ continues to expand. His leadership continues to expand. The production certainly is there. And I think that's the big reason why the Grizzlies are where they are record-wise. The other thing, this is another storyline that I think bears watching, is Jaren's assertiveness and greater level of physicality. I think he's really growing into his body, frankly. Coming in, maybe a little skinny, added some strength, added some bulk. Talked about it while he was rehabbing the knee injury. I'm working on my body. I'm working on my diet. And I think the benefits are there now because he's doing a better job of rebounding, which his first couple of years in the league, the rebounding was not what you would have expected from somebody with his size and athleticism, but the rebounding numbers are starting to get to a point where you think like, okay, this is suitable for a starting four in the NBA. I also like the fact, now I know he took 12 threes in Charlotte, but I like the fact that he is more willing and more assertive in putting the ball on the floor in the painted area and going to the rim. As Brevin continues to point out, and rightly so, Jaren is a matchup nightmare. And, you know, there are guys that are not either tall enough or big enough or quick enough or physical enough. He can give you a little bit of everything. He can give you the spin move in the lane. He can give you the little half hook. He can step out. He can hit the three. He can even bring the ball up the floor, which he did a couple of times on this road trip to start to initiate the break. I just like Jaren's mindset. First couple of years, there was kind of a happy-go-lucky, happy to be here. And he hasn't lost that. I mean, you see the dance, that he had after making a three in Charlotte. So, you know, that hasn't gone away. But it's been layered with an element of assertiveness and a toughness and an edge to his game that maybe we hadn't seen in previous years. And I am very gratified to see this. So many of us said the Grizzlies will go as far as Jaren Jackson's improvement will carry them. And he has improved. And he has become better in a number of areas. And I think that is also another reason why the Grizzlies have 40 wins with two to go before the All-Star break. Finally, this is one of the best stories for me. You know, Steven Adams obviously had been hated or at least thoroughly disliked by the Grizzlies fan base after the dust-up with Zach Randolph that caused Zach Randolph participation in a Game 7 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. We knew that he was a great offensive rebounder. He has been throughout his career. Did anybody anticipate that he would also be such a great assist guy? This is easily the best assisting season of his career. We're seeing a level of athleticism. We've seen him block three shots in multiple games this year. We've seen him be a very adept passer. We have seen him be an enforcer, a physical presence, which has allowed the Grizzlies to get out to some of these good starts. When I think about the Detroit game and the Charlotte game, if you had to pick an MVP of the first quarter, Steven Adams certainly would have been in the conversation because sometimes early in games, you're not shooting real well. Well, he's there to pick up the miss and put it back in. He's top 10 in the league in putbacks. 46% of his rebounds are on the offensive end. You look at the offensive rebounding numbers, and they are just insane where he's picking up 5, 6, 7 offensive rebounds a game and putting up double-doubles, and it's because of his work on the offensive glass. To me, that has been a major, I don't want to say it's a surprise necessarily, but it's a very pleasant development, we'll put it that way, because, look, we all fell in love with Jonas Valanciunas because of offensive rebounding, making threes, just a character. Really loved having Jonas as part of the team. Steven Adams, not the same player, you don't run plays for him. His offense is almost exclusively putbacks and maybe a couple of post moves per game. But what he has meant to this team in terms of teaching the bigs how to play well in the post, and I would imagine that Jaren Jackson Jr.'s evolution and development is due in part to what Steven Adams has taught him and his ability to be a great teammate, because he's played on some high-level teams, remember, with Oklahoma City. So, I mean, he's played with really, really good players. And so even though chronologically he's not old, but he's been around enough and has been a veteran presence for this Grizzlies team that has really, really helped them out. Those are four storylines that, you know, just jump out. I mean, there are others that you can talk about, but I think that those are the four predominant storylines. When you ask me, okay, what's the best stuff about the Grizzlies from, you know, the first 60 games, that's where I'm going with all of that. And so the Grizzlies, one more on the road, one more at home before the All-Star break. Ja Morant going as an All-Star starter for the Grizzlies to Cleveland. Desmond Bane, Rising Stars, game 3-point shootout. Should be very exciting. Thrilled to have some Grizzlies representation in Cleveland. In the meantime, I'm going to fly off to Northern California, and I'm going to kick my feet up, and I'm going to drink some really, really good wine and get some R&R. Hope that you have a very safe and restful All-Star break. We'll catch you on the flip side and bring you up to date on all the things going on with the Memphis Grizzlies. This has been the Grizz Weekly Grind, a proud affiliate of the Basketball Podcast Network, brought to you today by the Hoop City Basketball Club and by DraftKings Sportsbook. We thank them for their support. We thank you for your listenership. Go ahead, rate, review, subscribe. Please tell a friend. It's the Grizz Weekly Grind on the Basketball Podcast Network. I'm Pete Pranica. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.